your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
If everybody wants to settle into their seats, let's get started. So, what does an active alcoholic call a balanced diet? A beer in each hand. Then you come here and it turns into a cup of coffee, right? All right. Good evening. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Zach. Thank you for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation period. So please take a moment to get situated. We ask you please silence your phones for this part of the meeting. What we're going to do is we're going to take the next few minutes to get centered and you know, kind of clear up our connection with God so that we can stay focused during the meeting. I don't know about any of you. I've had a pretty crazy day today, so definitely going to take advantage of that. So if everyone's ready and comfortable, and let's start the meditation. Now we're going to say the fog light prayer for those of you who care to join in. If you don't know it, you can follow along. It's written up here on the screen. Repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light so those who are lost, sick, or dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. So, in this group, we read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience, from the book, because the object of working the 12 steps is to have a spiritual experience, so we think it's kind of important that you know what one is. And tonight I've asked Bridget to read that for us, and hopefully wherever you are, you've got it, because I don't. All right.
First off, thank you for allowing me to be here and read, and think of all of you as a family. Spiritual experience. The terms of spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what psychologist William James calls the educational variety. Because they develop slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than ourselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are not indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to bring up my son, Freddie, for his three years of sobriety today. I present you with this medallion for your sobriety. I am so proud of you. I'm not done. Here is a second medallion because I know you like to pass them down. So, I love you.
I'm Fred. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Fred.
Thank you, God, number one. God has changed my life, but the past 3 years look like it's it's a transformation. It's a spiritual experience, and I got that through working the 12 steps and trust God, clean house, help others, and work with another drunk is like the main things I do. You know, just self-sacrifice every day. I do my best at it. I'm not perfect at it, but thank you, guys. Thanks, Mom.
Congratulations, Fred. I'm proud of you. All right. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down for the remainder of the meeting, if you can avoid it. This is a tech-free meeting, so we ask that you please set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. And now I'm very excited to introduce, for her second week here, Marion, our speaker. She is just, I mean, not only does she help a lot of women, and not only has she worked the 12 steps, but when I hear her speak, she's so genuine, and she just always comes from the heart. And, you know, some people have to work at being themselves. I know I do, but not her. And so I just can't wait to see what she has to say to us all about step two tonight. So please help me welcome Marion.
All right, it's on. Oh. I'm Marion, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Good to be here and good to be, I guess, so freaky still, I can't believe it. I just want to thank my home group for having me, the honor and the privilege to do this and share my experience, strength, and hope with you all. Oh, Marybeth, there you are, Maggie, yay, hi. Mary Beth from Jersey's here. Yeah, my girl. Congratulations, Freddie. That was just what a pleasure. And Bridget, he is just such a dear heart. And you know, I can say that about you know, there's just some wonderful sober gentlemen in this room, and amazing ladies, that's for sure. And I'm just so proud to be a part of this group. And I want to welcome anyone who's new to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope you find a home here if you're having a problem with alcohol, and your life is unmanageable and you need some help. This is definitely a home group where we are eager to pass it on. We are eager to help the new drunk. And, you know, so many times this group in particular, I mean, I can only speak for my own home group, but one of the greatest thrills we get is going to the diner or something afterwards. It's, yeah, I got the new guy tonight. You know, I got the new girl tonight. And man, is there anything I know about my recovery is this, this is something, to not be missed. What a joy. I don't know if you, Peter heard me freaking out earlier and I do every single time I get up here. I don't ever want to take it lightly that, you know, get in the way of what God has to say. And I put a lot of pressure on myself and I just, it's human. I feel like throwing up at the same time all the time when I get up here. But so I'm just going to share my experience and breathe. There's some places in the big book I was reading and what's really been on my heart the last few days is that demonstration of power that God showed me when I first came in the rooms. And usually when I do something like this, it always brings me back to the beginnings. You know, what was my first experience? You know, what were my first experiences with God? And how did this happen? You know, how did it happen? The difference between November 10th, which was my birthday, where I got drunk twice in one day, to November 11th, when God saw fit to give me the gift of desperation. How does that happen? You know, and not in any way, shape, or form taking the credit for that, guys. You know, the day before we come in here, we're beat down and we're hurt worse than we ever are. I mean, can you believe that? I mean, for me, I think back on that and I was you know, I was hopeless. I was helpless. I was dead inside, so dead inside. And God saw fit to just give me something I never had before. And to give me a different thought, to give me a different action on November 11th than on November 10th. How does that happen? And so what I'm going to do today, I mean, what has just really been on my heart is to share from my own experience the demonstrations of that power. You know, our big book talks about God is either everything or he's nothing. And one thing I like to always add to that is God is either everywhere or he's nowhere. I believe that because God would speak through me. You know, there's people that say that, you know, Mickey says that, you know, God will speak through brick walls. God was reaching out for me and chasing me down and trying to get me. And he would use different form, whether it was, you know, I talked last week about the tribe. And one of my favorite stories is in our third edition. It's called Join the Tribe. And where I'm from in Washington State is there's a huge Native culture there. And my mom was born and raised in Alaska. And so I'm part Alaskan Aleut. So I was always like, I was very drawn to that. I was drawn to the beliefs of Native Americans. And although, you know, but I just, like I say, this is my own heart, you know. God is either everywhere or he's nowhere. And I found that stuff to be true. And so I'm going to read a little bit from Join the Tribe, just because. So one of these miraculous demonstrations early on for me was a gentleman named Cliff Kelly, and he was this big Native American, and he had hair down to here, and he would stand up in the room when he spoke, and you could hear a pin drop. And he had the kindest, gentlest spirit. And I know it's kind of unusual, but I'm just gonna be me. In this story of Join the Tribe, it's written in Native American language. And it's very simple and it's very beautiful, but just how it talks and when he speak from heart, big men cry. Words of truth and love are strong medicine. And at the closing of that chapter, it says, I know peace. How? I say, just let us happen. This sober Indian say to sick red eye alcoholic who want good medicine, put cork in bottle. No drunk hopeless if he want to follow guide along right trail. Go to AA meetings, listen, not just hear noise. Get sponsor and phone numbers, call friend in AA. When bad thoughts come, let group spirit of love and understanding protect you. Take my hand, walk with me up 12 steps of AA to peace. To Indian, I say, don't be afraid to join AA. I once hear people say, only Indians crazy when drunk. If so, AA full of Indians. Join the tribe. And so that's what I mean by tribe. That's what I mean by tribe. It's like, you know, we're all crazy when we do that stuff. And so what I would see was these demonstrate, because I needed God with skin on. You know, I told you last week I started seeing the world different. I, you know, we go for these walks in the park and treatment, and there was bright colors and it was beautiful, and I'd have my friend Cliff who would speak in the meetings, and you could hear a pin drop, and he passed on, and this chapter was read at his service. He had always wanted to bring the tribe together with my Northwest group, and when they were putting him in the ground, there was an eagle that swooped down like this, a bald-headed eagle. I don't know if you've ever seen one in real life, but they're pretty majestic. Swoops down like this and goes up, and my friend Willie says, there goes the spirit, you know, like this. He just goes like this. They say, Haishka. So anyway, that's my little Indian story. But my big Indian story, my little Indian story. But that was one of the demonstrations to me of feeling the power of God, of feeling the language of the heart, of having an understanding where this thing came alive and open in me, you know? And God would speak to me through nature, you know? My kids, I remember being about 6 months sober, and I was driving this old beat up, crashed up Audi that cost me like $500, and we were going to go drive up the North Cascades Highway. And in Western Washington, it's one of the most beautiful drives over to Eastern Washington, Tim. But, you know, like that drive up. And I'd done it, I don't even know, hundreds of times in my childhood and in my life, and drinking beer and whatever things on the way, and never really seeing the beauty around me. And I remember having my three kids with me, and I'm driving up around that pass, and I literally had to pull over to the side of the road because I understood the word breathtaking, because I could see the mountains, I could feel the rivers, and I was alive. You know, I was alive. And so there would be things like that. And you know, and so much, there's so much information and so much in the chapter to the agnostic that talks to us about why to find God, where to find God, and how to find God. And I thought, you know, I came in here, I had given my life to the carpenter on my knees in October 1888, and I didn't think that chapter applied to me. But I had a lot of agnosticism in me. It's like, where's God? How do I find him? You know, what is the meaning of all this? You know, and so the transformation started happening just by hearing the right thing at the right time, seeing the right thing, seeing great demonstrations of that power. On page 55 of We Agnostics, actually, we're fooling ourselves, for deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, thank you so much. I really need to blow it, but for faith in a power greater than, or blow it, no. For faith in a power greater than ourselves, a miraculous, I love this line, miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. And there isn't one of us that could be sitting in this room. I know I say this to people a lot where, you know, this is a group of people that would not normally mix. If we were having our way right now, this room wouldn't be full of 100 people sitting here listening to this message. Where would we be on our own devices? And I can't be here on my own power. You know, I was thinking about, you know, my life was run on selfishness. It was run on selfishness. I managed my life. And at the beginning of my high school years, you know, middle school went great. I was a gymnast. I was straight A's. I was, you know, in the choir singing solos. And I was managing my life well in this crazy environment that I was living in. But somehow I was having some success with me. And, you know, and the freshman year of high school, I gave that life to a power greater than myself. And that power that was greater than myself was alcohol. And then that became my power. And when I started hitting my bottom, and I started reaching outside, not even reaching outside of myself and trying all different forms and all different methods, I went back to self-will, guys. I went back to self-will. But the thought that came to me on November 11th, 1989, the thought with a voice that came to me November 11th, 1989 was to go to treatment. And that voice came from somewhere that was outside of me. Because left to my own devices, I'm drunk twice in one day. You know? Miraculous demonstrations of that power. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was much a fact as we were, we found that the great reality deep down within us, and then the last analysis is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. There was another place I wanted to go here. And there's a solution where he's saying to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are a phenomena. And that's the thing I look at in my life, in my recovery, and the places I can't take credit is, you know, as try as we might, nobody can explain that phenomena. Nobody can explain that word. Nobody can explain the difference to me between November 10th and November 11th. It just can't be done. That has to come from a power greater than myself. It has to come from there. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas and emotions and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. Why did I take action November 11th? Why did I take action after all this stuff? Why do we do that? Because God came in and God did it for me. And God started showing me these great demonstrations of power. I've been trying, and the doctor's going on to say, I've been trying to produce, and that's Dr. Young, to produce some such emotional rearrangement within you. For many individuals, the methods which are employed are successful, but I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your description. And I believe, oh, I got a blow. Better. I hope you can edit out the snot. So I'm going to read little bits here, guys. This is how I'm going to find God. Page 46, we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was possible, it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed by a sense of power and directions, provided we took other simple steps. And those simple steps are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So that's how I'm going to find God. That's where I'm going to find God. So it says here, this is how we did. For me, I worshiped controlling my life, my self-will. I worshiped alcohol. We found, too, that we'd been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people? Anything that I put above myself, I'm not enough. So I've got somebody on a pedestal. Have I not worshiped people, sentiment, things, money, ourselves? And then with a better motive, have we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, and the flowers? Well, yeah. Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing. We saw at last, were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In warm one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. I can say for myself that when people would say the right thing at the right time, when I wholeheartedly took this step. You know, they used to say back in the day that we came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Then they say that we would come to. And then we would say that we would come to believe. And our big book talks about having a mustard seed of willingness. Just a mustard seed of willingness. And just that place that cracks open, that opens me up just enough to believe that you believe. And sometimes, you know, my first sponsor was a beautiful Catholic woman. And little did I know that that would be a road I would take someday. And I remember being at a meeting, and it was a Friday. And it was like, we're going to... She comes up to me, and I'm like looking for a sponsor. And she goes, "Well, Miriam, what are you doing this weekend?" And I said to her, "I'm going to go. Well, I'm going to take the kids to the park, and I'm going to do the grocery shopping. And then I got to go to work, and then I'm going to stay up until 12 o'clock tonight. And then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that." And she looks at me, and she holds her hand up, and she says, "Whoa, maybe one of these days you'll slow down long enough for God to be in charge." And I knew at that moment that God had brought me a teacher, and that I'd been praying for her to be in my life, you know, that she would be my first teacher. And through her, you know, I had lost my mom before I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. She had passed away when I was drunk. And this little woman, Kathy Downs, she would have potlucks at her house, and we would pick up leaves in her yard, and we'd press leaves, and we'd sit down at the table, and she'd go through this book with me. And she developed brain cancer, and it was like this, you know, like the things that we go through in our old days and the things that we go through in AA. I got to walk her through that process, you know, where it was like, here's Kathy losing her hair, and here's Kathy, you know, having her kids to take care of. And she didn't have the strength to do that, but she would call me and she'd say, "Marian, where are you? Why aren't you calling me?" And I'd be like, "Well, I don't want to bother you. I don't want to bother you." And she's like, "How do you don't deny me my sobriety. Don't deny me that, Marian. I need you in my life, you know?" And, so she became my first teacher. And her and her husband were great friends of the Northwest Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. They were tender, sweet people. They would have potlucks in their house, and they just invited people in. Because, see, I needed to feel the love of Alcoholics Anonymous. Before I could be, even the first side of the triangle I found for my life was not only this God, but my love for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So Kathy early on became my teacher, and so yeah, she walked me on this journey, and she took me through this book, and what a beautiful experience that was. So, yeah, that's about Kathy. God had this all bubbling up inside of me today to just tell you story after story, because the deal is, this is the language of the heart. And I can't be, you know, I'm not a technical girl. I'm a heart girl. and when I share my heart with you, that's where, I mean, I'm freaking out right now a little bit. And so... Okay. Okay, God, I feel like I'm frozen for a second, and that's okay. Stay with me. So I remember going to this house. I'm gonna really be me, and I'm gonna lean. I remember, because see, so I came in and I had the carpenter, and then what I would do is I'd start separating myself from the room. That I had this God, and if you didn't have this God, you know, that was my agnosticism. You know, that if you didn't have this God and you didn't do it my way, as I would walk through my recovery, and so many times we go back to that place of agnosticism. And what happened in my life was, in 2004, I left my husband, and I was a victim of domestic violence, and my children were grown and they were out of the house, and I was living in a place of the bedevilments where, I mean, it was, I was living in that place on page 52 that it talks about, and which I'm going to read right now so you can understand where I am. I was having trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control my emotional nature, prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living, had a feeling of usefulness, full of fear, unhappy, and I couldn't be a real help to other people. And so I was living in that place. I'm clean and sober. But what had happened for me was I was a worship leader in a Pentecostal church. You know, the kind where you jump around and I played guitar and I had this God and I got in a really dangerous place in my recovery, because what had happened is, you know, our big book talks about, you know, our religion becomes that it's always AA first, and that the church is to enhance that. But what happened is it flipped for me, and I was in a dangerous place of really some self-righteousness. Some very much, you know, when our book talks about, we spoke of intolerance. I would, you know, go to this church and I'd serve and, oh, just go see the little peons at AA. That's kind of where my attitude, not the peons at AA, but I'd walk in and it'd be like, if everybody knew God my way. And we can get that way. You know, I became the super server at church and then I dabble in at AA. And my life was falling apart. I was a wreck. And, you know, through the power of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and good sponsorship and outside help, you know, and lots of prayer, you know, God bless my ex-husband. You know, I wish him wonderful things in his life. And God has really transformed my heart in that. But at 15 years sober, I hit this horrible bottom. And my church had turn their back on me, because all they knew what to do was to believe for my marriage. And I had just been visiting the rooms of AA. Because see, what happens is, as I grew more and more that way, and I got some real self-righteousness. And so the day I left him in this current agnosticism, you know, my church turned their back on me. Because all they could do was believe. This is not to knock church. My God, everything has been beautiful and the amends have been made and it's wholeheartedly been beautiful. But where I found myself was in a really crazy place where on that day, August 8th of 2004, when I left that place, the hand in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous met me there. And they were the ones that helped swoop me up and get me to a place of back in the big book and back in the steps and back in this place. And I remember, you know, that's why I say this thing about, you know, like either God is everywhere or he's nowhere. Because I began, you know, I spent this relationship with God and I'd spend time in the Bible and I'd spend the time growing in that relationship. But I became self-righteous. And I remember these people inviting me to their home. And they were Buddhists. And when you walked in their house, they had this mantle full of all this stuff. And I remember just walking in their front door, and they had graciously invited me into their home and fed me. And, you know, this is a pretty hellacious bottom for at 15 years sober. And I remember walking into their house, and there was this moment where I thought, oh my God, they're Buddhists. How could I be here? I mean, that's yucky, right? that's really yucky. And the next voice that came, the voice with the thought that I'll describe that stuff to you guys over and over again through this series. The next voice that came to me was, I'm here. I'm here. And you know, the women of Alcoholics Anonymous, that day that I left, and they took me and they swooped me up and they hid me out, and we got restraining order and we got a doctor, we got a lawyer, and you know, all these beautiful things that it flipped me and turned me back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not instead of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but to add to it. And I can't think of the exact words the book says about that, but you know, and some of those other demonstrations a year later, you know, going by that same church and hearing a voice that says, Marion, go in. And I'm the next voice to me, to myself, is, I can't go in there. And the next voice that comes says, you can go anywhere. And there was amends that were made at that altar, and the pastor talking to me, and beautiful things that came in and as a result of that. So these things work hand in hand. Our big book talks about in the chapter to the Agnostics, we see where religious people are right. That is a huge part of my walk. That's a huge part of my walk. And my job always in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is to grow in effectiveness, grow in awareness, grow in that conscious contact with God, grow and to grow in that with the girls that I work with, so that I have, you know, that conscious contact. I don't need God less today at 28 years sober than I did when I was a year. Or 6 months, or at that time at 15 years. I need God more today than I ever did. I need to work with more women today than I ever did. I need to pray and meditate more than I ever did. But I also need to be open and understanding to whatever your walk is, and that it's yours. What's yours is yours, and what's mine is mine. That's what our book talks about. You know, that's the main reason for the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is to bring us to that relationship with a power greater than ourselves. I can say mine is the carpenter, and I can shout that from the rooftops, but whatever yours is, whatever that place is, whatever that understanding is yours. And I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the doors were open wide, that if I wanted to believe however I wanted to believe, that's what AA has done for me. So yeah, all that without a breath. So today what that second step looks like for me in my life is to seek that God with my whole heart, soul, mind, and strength. And to be open to whatever your experience is as well as mine. And that our big book talks about the realm of the spirit is broad and roomy and all-inclusive and never exclusive. And you know, you can look at someone like Fred with 3 years and his journey, and how, you know, the time with another alcoholic that you spend at 20 years old, you know, and how that's transformed and changed your life. That, you know, the miraculous demonstrations of that happened for me in my life. But when I get to work with another girl and I get to see that light go on in their eyes, and I get to tell them, wait till you get to give this to somebody else. And how beautiful that is, and that that's the bright spot of our lives, and that's not to be missed. I think I'm going to call it done for now. So, love you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. That was awesome, Marion. Thank you so much. Let's get another round of applause for her. Now is time for our secretary's report.
Hey, Hi, my name is Chris. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. Great. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Andrew to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Manager, I'm an alcoholic. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940s style big book sponsorship, from the foreword to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Could I please get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is anyone in need of a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Okay. Would you mind standing up, sir? All right. So you can meet us up here at the front after the meeting, and let's get these folks. Oh, okay. Okay, great. So let's meet these folks up front, men and women, and get them back to God. Please join us Monday nights. We have a big book study meeting where the big book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and our big book study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, the Little Red Book, and big book dictionaries also for sale. We meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15 p.m., and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Also, I have an announcement here. I have a flyer from John. This is Alive Again. Russell Spatt is putting on February 3rd, there's going to be... speakers, all day speakers at the 6th annual cross-Florida conference. It's a faith-based thing. There's going to be lots of speakers, and it should be good. So if anyone wants more information on that, please get with John there after the meeting. Do we have any other announcements?
AA's got talent
also.
Robert.
Yeah, Robert's got tickets. So you can see the information there, and you can also see Robert there for tickets. Anyone, if you're still, yeah, okay. Anything else? Okay, that looks like it. See you next week.
Thank you, Chris. We have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts that we have ever had at this meeting online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org, so go ahead and give that a listen. I'd also like to invite all of you to our Monday night big book study, which takes place on the third floor here Mondays at 7:15. Show up early if you'd like to fellowship with us. And for those who would like to thank tonight's speaker, if you'd please just line up down the center aisle when we're done closing. And also real quick before we close, if you smoke or vape, there's a 75-foot no smoke, no vape area in front of the doors on either side. So please try and take that over to the smoking area we have set up. We appreciate it. Let's take a moment of silence and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See you next week. Godspeed.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby. Yes, when you laughing, ba 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 ba, when you laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on, and I hope the world smiles for you.
Thank you. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Shine.